Okay. All right, well, we'll just come to order. And Representative Martin, did you want to join us at the table and
yes,
give us an explanation of House Bill 15? And then in about 2:30, you want to get a quorum, we'll call a meeting to order. No, not until later on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and gentlemen. This bill here, concept, has been around for about 7 years now, and I mostly picked it up from being at the National Conference of State Legislative Meetings, and found out that most states have found this as a major way of getting businesses into depressed areas of the state, and also in those areas that have the highest unemployment, a historical high unemployment. And we have a tremendous amount of backup, although you don't have that much, but we have at the office from the HUD, from the National Federation, and from national state governments that are heavily involved in it. The bill that we first worked on in my office, 1986, came from Colorado, because at that time, NCSL thought that Colorado had the best model and the most successful model, because they had the experience of other states, to encourage businesses into these areas and also make sure that they comply to the law, because as you see here, it's a tax incentive to go into those areas where we have the worst unemployment or depressed areas. The bill itself then went in 1986, because I'd introduced it previously and then we upgraded it, to the Department of Commerce, who gave us extensive rewrite in November of 86. And this was to be comparable to the Alaskan situation. And some of the numbers that we have here can be adjusted. They were in there deliberately because the national organization found them most desirable. We may argue about 25% unemployment in some areas historically for 5 years. Where would you find those? Most likely you would find all those in rural Alaska. But at the same time, that probably is where we should emphasize companies and somehow have enticed them to go to these areas and start whatever is available. We previously, Colorado bill and some of the other states, Chicago had a real good one for the urban areas. And most states have done this in urban areas. We are emphasizing, again, what Colorado did, rural areas. That's where they had the unemployment. The selection of criteria is pretty broad deliberately to allow and to entice here again. We don't want to think or second guess what kind of businesses might want to come to a specific area. Let it be known in law what we're interested in. Let those business people come to Commerce or Department of Labor, whoever wants to handle it, and say, look, we have this offer, maybe fish processing in some place. And with this incentive, yes, we can see capitalizing, we can see the value of putting your people to work because of the tax credits we're able to get. And of course, it has limitations, too, that the areas chosen, I might say that in most cases, what we have done here, we're the only state so far not to do this, they have let it up to legislators to decide in those states what sections of the states are most desirable. In our negotiation with various people, we said, let's leave it up to, at that time, to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development to decide the 8 areas. We say, well, why did we limit to 8 areas? Because most states in their experiment of the first year or the second year choose the top areas of the choices, then see where businesses are enticed. In some states now that have this law in for as much as 6 years now, that would be the most because it's only been a phenomenon for 7 years, they're up to 32 selected sites. But we found out, especially at an NCSL meeting last year in Indiana, they were all suggesting that the politics selecting the zones get pretty heavy. And so that's another reason why we were glad to leave it up to the experts in the right departments. But the simplicity is basically if we have a chance to entice businesses and it's working very well in other states, why not try it in this state? 25 states already have laws for it. Seven other states have current legislation pending pertaining to it. The federal government has tried for about 8 years now to do this on a national basis, but it's kind of ironic how that happened. First, the U.S. Senate passed it, and the House was rejecting it, and then about 4 years ago, the U.S. House passed it, and then the Senate rejected it, and, you know, it goes back and forth that way. But the states have been extremely successful of it.
I've noticed similar situations in other bike network legislatures.
Yeah, right.
Could you explain again how the tax credit part works, and how would the credit be?
You have two major parts here with the tax credit, and this one over with the Department of Law. I didn't know, we didn't have as many incentives as other states do on tax credit, because corporations and companies don't have as much taxes. So we were kind of limited to what we could offer as an incentive, and there's two ways. One had to do with capitalization, the equipment, new buildings, rebuilding, remodeling, and all those kind of credits. Then also the tax credit per individual that is higher. I think it goes up to $500 per person that you can get tax credits on. In the fish processing plant on land, I think this would be a tremendous incentive for them. That's the immediate one I can think of. How it can help us in urban Alaska, in Anchorage, with the foreign trade zone. We completed two of the three major things that need to be done with the foreign trade zone. The third one is getting the license for downtown Anchorage and that port area, and then allowing this enterprise zone to also entice people or business, whoever, to come into that zone. They could build new factory, but the processing plant, changing the bulk materials that we'll get from Korea or Japan, put it in smaller packages to send it out. So they will get a tariff deduction, plus they could also, from the state, get a enterprise zone reduction for the number of employees they hire. And that's only good for so many years. And then, obviously, as the business succeeds, then the state gets reimbursed. So it's a direct tax deduction per person that was unemployed that you hire. We emphasize unemployed.
Okay, so for the first year, it's the full amount, and then what happens? How does that work after that?
Well, I think it's good for 5 years maximum in the tax credits.
Good. Representative Ellis?
Representative Martin, you just mentioned being that the state would be reimbursed, or a local government who withheld the taxes would be reimbursed.
Thank you for bringing it up.
I didn't understand that.
No, thank you for bringing it up. This is strictly state. We didn't want to get into local government.
Okay.
Local governments can add other incentives if they want. This is strictly state now.
But the reimbursement part, you said after...
No, they don't get reimbursed. It's a tax credit.
Okay.
Right. Up to so many years.
Okay, you just used the word reimbursement, so
I'm sorry, I misused that word then.
Okay, so...
I said reimburse the state then. You know, after 5 years, that's it. Then you pay regular taxes.
Oh, so it's not reimbursed. You just start paying taxes after this period.
Right. Yes, I said reimburse the state, because we give you a break here for 5 years to develop it. And then if it's going successfully, now we've helped you to get started. Now I'll pay your way in the state. So we'll reimburse it. You go back on the tax call.
Okay, but you wouldn't be paying, like, let's say we gave them the tax incentive for 5 years.
No reimbursement.
And then after 5 years it stops and they just start paying the regular taxes. They don't have to pay any reimbursement for back during those 5 years. Okay,
no.
I just misunderstood.
What did you wrong?
Representative Kupfner?
Thank you. We have a tax credit for shore-based fish processing plants. And have you looked at this in relation to that? Because that's a rather open-ended one. This one sets criteria, which may be useful in that regard. I just wondered how the two of them might fit together.
I haven't personally, but it was the tax law people, one of the first ones that we did contact to get in with the preliminary to this legislation. And they were some of the one from the Colorado law, the various taxes they had. They threw out, well, we don't have this, we don't have that, we don't have that. But we do have this and this, two main ones. So we don't have as many incentives as other states do, but let's use what the two we do have.
I was thinking that that one is aimed at a particular industry, but it doesn't set the kind of criteria that you set that may be useful in attracting it to, say, one village as opposed to another.
Yeah. It is my hope that
marrying the two may be a useful.
During your debate, and of course the experts that you all going to have, this ain't golden. I stole it from one state and we maximize it. Yeah. So as you discuss, you're going to find probably other incentives and perhaps other disincentives. Perhaps this isn't going to encourage them. And the main thing that other states have found is that business will grab and then they cheat on it. So that's why I say we use the very latest model available from Colorado and from SCSL, all the experience they have had from other states. And so now it's pretty tight, but it's still successful.
You know, I'm grateful for the backup.
Well, we got a lot more, I just didn't want to bring it up. I know that the people from HUD, when we first introduced this bill again last year, called up, and they want to get involved. They said Alaska is one of the only states that hadn't been invited to motivate on enterprise zone, and they are very sold for the high unemployed area in the first area.
We get forgotten. Okay, further questions for the Dan Martin?
Concerns of Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You speak in some of your backup material of environmental restrictions being relaxed. And, could you expand on that a little bit? I tend to feel that when we talk environmental restrictions, it's generally out of basic necessity, but because we're talking about water or air quality. And what did you have in mind there?
Because for the first time, this came through the state of Colorado. And the state of Colorado knew that in this rural area, one of its major problems it was having was its own environmental restrictions, less than federal. But they have very much realized that, you know, who's at fault here? And it's we're at fault. You know, we put so many things tight on mining, for instance, that no one's mining at all. And so maybe we weren't realistic in what we're looking at. In fishing, it may be in some of your, I really have high hope for in this bill more than anything else, it's on land processing. And maybe some companies may tell you, well, we're not going on land, it's impossible to meet X guideline that you have there for whatever reason they were created. So if there's flexibility there, fine, why not?
I guess that, I guess that was one of my concerns with the flexibility. Generally, when we're talking about taking care of the nest or these environmental restrictions, it's down to the lowest common thing that we can fight for. And it seems like a relaxation of what would be viewed by many as a minimum necessity just doesn't seem like there's that much room for being a little more flexible.
Well, that's another reason, if I may, Mr. Chairman, why we... I had more faith in the departments doing this rather than legislators. And that's where if you read all the other bills, this would be the first state that allows the department to do it rather than the legislators. And therefore, reading different states and the battles they went through, who selected whose zone, you know, it got to be a battle.
Well, we've invited members of the, or representatives of the Department of Commerce, Community Regional Affairs, and the Department of Labor to come. I have somebody here from the Department of Labor who signed up to testify. Representative Martin, does anybody know if Representative Boucher is in town?
He's locked down.
Oh, I was going to say you can join us here. You could pull up a chair at the end of the table if you'd like to. And join us here at the table if you'd like, Representative Martin.
I don't like it.
Chair.
I don't blame you. I have to sit where he wants to sit.
You can just pull up a chair if you want. Sally Sadler, Department of Labor.
Dressed
like
especially behind me. Get over here.
State your name for the record and who you represent.
I'm Sally Sadler. I'm a labor economist with the Alaska Department of Labor Research and Analysis Shop.
Uh-oh.
That's my son. No,
I know.
The department would just like to make a few comments or ask a few questions in order to clarify some portions of this bill. As the bill stands, it says you can have any area qualify for this enterprise zone, but the criteria for qualifying includes unemployment rate and per capita income information that is only available on the census area level. So if there were an area smaller than that census area level that wanted to trigger, we wouldn't be in a position to provide that detailed information to determine whether or not they would qualify. Another point is the qualifying at the rate of 25% of historical unemployment rate. That would have to be further defined because right now it would be questionable whether that would be a one-month unemployment rate or would that be an annual average unemployment rate. And as information stands, there are very few areas, if any, that qualify on an annual average basis of having an unemployment rate in excess of 25% over that time period. I do believe the bill as it's written puts the Department of Labor into the position, additional position of taxation. Right now we're only involved in unemployment insurance taxes, and I think this gets us involved in the investment tax credit, and it might be more appropriate if that function were with the Department of Revenue. Another area to determine, as the bill stands, it calls for a credit of $500 per employee. The definition for coming up with what an employee would be, we're not in a position right now to meet those criteria. We would, in fact, not be able to, the data that we're currently collecting aren't put together in a way that would allow us to come up with a raw number by which you could multiply that $500 credit. That's the extent of the comments that the department has. Any questions?
Was it Belcher or you?
Okay, the concept of enterprise zones is not new, meaning it's an approach that has been brought about recently. I'm wondering how they do this in other geographical areas, and maybe it's more appropriate to address that to both you and to Representative Martin, because it appears that getting these numbers are pretty important to the overall picture. Does that
well,
we a fair can assumption?
Have Representative Martin come back up and answer some more questions too.
Right.
Representative Belcher. Terry, why don't you just join us here? Because it's an ongoing process when you see mine.
Well, I think Representative Belcher, numbers are kind of unemployment, right? Unemployment right now. These were picked mainly because of the experience of other states. Maybe Southside Chicago has a much greater problem than we dream of. We think we're the worst in the nation. Maybe Colorado, which is built with monologue under, which was given by NCSR, is the best in the nation now. Maybe that number is too much. And that because we don't have a historical account of exact numbers, then the words may be changed. So that we know that Bethel, everyone knows they've been unemployed, there's a high number of unemployment. We know in Kotzebue there's a high unemployment, but not as bad now. Maybe it's nothing worse. Maybe someplace along the Lucian chain they may pick out. So I wouldn't mind being flexible for the Department of Commerce or Labor, whoever wants to take it, or if everyone wants to deny any reason whatsoever to do it, we can't. Give it back to the legislators like others are doing. The thing is, it's working in other states. It's a viable program. Now, what criteria we use, we have enough backup from NCSL. I have Oregon here, and I have the state of Washington here. You can pick what you want as to what numbers we want to use.
Okay, fine. But what is your response to what the people in labor?
Well, I didn't have much response because the three main thing was we can't do, and we don't know. And
No, they didn't say we can't do. It's just a matter of creating new statistical boundaries, primarily, as I understand it, their labor is based. I mean, most of the funding for determining unemployment or employment comes from the federal government. There are certain standards that they set up.
Sure.
Correct? Am I correct on that? And the area is a census area.
Sure.
If you recall on the Alaska Hire, when we were coming out with economic zones, that's what most of that $300,000.
That's what it's coming
from the economic zone. Is it possible through the chair? All right.
Yeah.
is it possible that some of those economic zones that were set up in that database that related to Alaska Hire might have application to this? And I'm not asking for a yes or no. Is that something worthwhile thinking about?
The statistical information could be put together in a way that you could come up with any aggregation of more than one census area.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, on that, when we were working on that, that's the exact same thing we were coming up here with, because these things are done on the same basis. So if the department wants to use our current figures on economic zone, which I think are absolutely the best, wonderful, insert them in here as the criteria in which we will establish a enterprise zone. Wonderful.
Well, there's an answer about your Rivers of Copeland has a question if you want to think about continuing that persistence.
Well, I guess what I was saying is maybe this is something that had been thought of, but maybe it hadn't been presented to you folks, and maybe you need to go back and look at the drawing board in concert with Representative Martin and see if that would be feasible to do so. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Copeland.
That's on the same point, sir. Representative Boucher has urged that we have a better statistical measure of what's happening in the state and how that can be applied to these kinds of census areas, too. Another point is the definition of employee. That's the same kind of problem we have in the schools, you know, whether it was the full-time equivalent or actual number of students enrolled. You know, we have 17,000 students going to school, but then you look at actually over a year's time, the full-time students shrink. So we're looking for long-term jobs of the people, not a very long-term job, but as long as possible, rather than, you know, having 500 people work a day apiece and giving a guy credit for 500 employees.
Yeah.
We would want to aggregate the hours of employment in some way. Now, how do you keep those kind of statistics?
We do not currently collect hours worked for all people that work in the state. We have a statistical program that we run that measures the hours, average hours worked for production employees and select
Congress.
But we do not have a measure.
How do you maintain, they're using federal employment procedures and unemployment, and that is very unsatisfactory, I realize. But some measure, the chair, perhaps the difference between the number of people working and the total adult population would be something like that. In other words, if we can define this well enough, then mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, for me, the most recent book that came out from the Department of Labor, I think they really upgraded some to law that you passed on local hire, pretty well zeroes in my mind, where we're having a high unemployment problem. And so, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We know this area is suffering, this area is suffering. They can tell us to the detail, government employees and private employees that are out of state hire. We should know in detail where our unemployment problems are. And Hankwood, break that down. Maybe it's Mountain View. Maybe it's, it's not Rabbit Creek for sure. Maybe it's Bernard, you know, or downtown Anchorage. In Fairbanks, they may select an area in Fairbanks. Maybe X area in Fairbanks is a real high unemployment area. But also we need to look at the pragmatic. It's not only a high unemployed area. What's the possibilities of anything going in there? So you might have to get with the Department of Commerce and say, you know, this is probably the worst high unemployed area in the state. The chances of getting into business and tights them there are zero. So then that would be logical to name that as an enterprise zone. Where it's an A to begin with, see how it works, and then legislators will probably have to change that as other states have done to other new areas, and if this thing succeeds at all. But I think most of the foundation is there. We need to change the wording in the bill to comply with what you are doing now as far as high unemployment areas, like the latest law says. Wonderful. It may be the best way, the most modern way to zero in to what we want.
I see there should, hopefully you think Department of Revenue should give us a fiscal note on it, since it's a tax credit, and Department of Law, I imagine, I mean, labor, you're going to need to give us something to There's representatives from Community Regional Affairs and Department of Commerce here today, but they don't have any specific testimony. They're just here to answer questions if we've got them. So if any of the committee members have direct questions, there are members here. Ma'am, did you have any written comments?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay. Representative Menard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sally, you mentioned something about the tax, the way the bill is now. It's going to be an area for, I just want to add a tax question.
I'm not real sure about that, but it talked about the Department of Labor being in the position to, I don't know whether it's fine, the tax credits or that kind of thing. It would seem to me that you would want the Department of Revenue involved in that, and I don't recall seeing it mentioned in the bill as it's written.
Was there a specific area you were looking at in the bill?
Page 3.
Well, it seems like that's where the point was raised in my mind. Yeah, I'm not sure that it's directly stated there. It may just be that it's implied if that's going on, if they would have some sort of involvement.
No. Was that Boucher? Did you have?
Yes, I'm getting a copy of HCR 52, which is what the legislation that came out of our work in the small business community. What I've done here is ask that the Department of Commerce and Economic Development to arrange the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research to prepare quarterly economic indicators for the state. But one of the thoughts are is this, I would rather, if it is more appropriate, see this done in your department over there. I would like to have you take a look at this, because I was just given a price by them of about $150,000. This is what they indicated to do this.
This legislation's on the calendar for next week.
Yeah, but I thought Thursday. I would like to have someone from the department when that comes up, if I may, come over and see if that can be done in-house, because if we expand on that, my point being, Mr. Chairman, that we'll begin to probably supply some of the information that we need here within the state.
It also solve a problem we have in the Commerce Budget Subcommittee, too, Representative Boucher, because there's a proposal to fund that in that subcommittee. We're trying to figure out how to deal with that.
Yeah, well,
if it was a fiscal note attached to the legislation, it'd go under new legislation. We might find an alternative funding source.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Ways to put it in the budget. Representative Martin.
Mr. I have a feeling that something's happening in communication. I don't even know when you ever open the bill, not yet today. But we have had discussions with the Department of Commerce. As a matter of fact, Mr. Baer, when she was, which she still is there, at the beginning of the year with the Governor and Tony Smith, I was surprised that last year they were very excited about this bill. And so we had two lengthy meetings over there with a number of people, but they knew this was the modern thing all over the nation. Now suddenly we find ourselves with everyone not knowing anything as it's the first day. So we have to go with that route, hopefully that they may get interested in somehow. However, I think it's probably be incumbent upon the committee. If you feel it's a good concept, could you instruct them, I don't care if it's labor, management, commerce, revenues, whoever, but we've worked on it for 3 years and we've given extensive background information to whoever to ask for it. And if it's worth the process, or, you know, throw it out, don't waste your time anymore. It's worthwhile. I hope you encourage some of the department to look into.
Okay. Representative Copeland, you have a question for Department of Commerce?
I was wondering, we have an existing statute, Chapter 26, Industrial Incentive Tax Credit, and I was wondering to the extent that that has been used.
Could you hear the question?
The industrial incentive tax credit under Chapter 26, 4326.010, et cetera, which is similar to this but doesn't have the other criteria. To what extent has that been used by business?
Yeah, Representative Coburn, of course, I'm not familiar with that. I need to get back to you.
All right, I think we've identified a lot of issues to deal with here in this legislation. I'd like the departments to go ahead and, if you could, put together position papers so at least you could get in writing where you're at on these things. And if you have specific suggestions about if there's the suggestion that revenue or, would be a more appropriate department to put it in, and I'm going to ask the staff to contact the Department of Revenue and ask them if they could give us a position paper also on House Bill 15, and then
I'd like also comments from Revenue and Commerce on the current application of Chapters 25 and 26.
Okay. Department of Commerce, if you take a look at that too.
Which bear on this. In other words, this would be an addition to that. It was a further definition of these terms.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll be trying to get something in writing, Representative Martin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. For labor, what we needed then.
Okay, so now we got a quorum. I'm going to call the meeting for order. It's 2:35. House Labor and Commerce Committee has come to order. It's March 31st, the 31st, and it's President of Representatives Kopanen, Boucher, Menard, Ellison, Donnelly, and first matter on the agenda is we'll take up House Bill 517, Civil Liability of Certain Volunteers. Do you have there's a proposed amendment? Or are we going to wait till Representative Wilmer? Is she coming down?
I don't
think
she is.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. While we're waiting, should I just wait till they come?
There's no. At least Judy's getting our calls.
It's just been reviewed by the spy.
Oh, no. We can
have I assume so.
Just if everybody wants to testify, so that I need to explain something.
The best story is
where can I get one of those posters? Here I've been paying my dues to the association. Here, they're all 11.
Okay, so we're not going to get it under the
Chicago Fairbank.
We'll keep an eye out for you.
Okay. Okay. Well, I've just been informed by staff that the proposed amendment as drafted doesn't quite fit with the drafting regulations, and they're over there drafting another amendment. Maybe we can take up HCR 39 just for the moment, and we'll return to HB 517 in just a second. Okay. So if the committee members can take a look at HCR 39. That's one of my bills. I don't know if the members have seen copies of this legislation
before. Is this
before. This
the problem we had out in Cook Inlet?
Right, exactly.
With the Spaniards coming in.
Yeah. It urges Congress to adopt laws consistent with the U.S. Constitution to restrict the employment of non-resident aliens on oil and gas
development. Is that run into any problem with those green card people up on the slope?
Well, this is offshore. If they were to, there is potential to do offshore up there, yeah. But anyhow, there's a proposed committee substitute in the members' files that changes the words foreign worker to alien, which we found out is the correct terminology. Alien workers.
These foreigners, foreigners.
Yeah. And clarifies that any restrictions on employment must be consistent with the United States Constitution. Has a zero fiscal note, no further committee referrals. The issue here is last year there was a proposal before the United States Congress to ban. And the federal government can do this, by weekend.
Mr. Chairman, is there anybody to testify on this?
Is there anyone signed up to testify on HCR 39? No.
I'd need to move out with individual
records. Well, we need to adopt a committee substitute.
Okay. I shall move.
Okay.
And I move to move it out with individual recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Please, if somebody's got something,
I discussed it. Move it.
Well,
just trying to help the chairman.
Far be it for me, Mr. Chairman, to try to slow down the local tire bill, but did you have more? It sounded like you had a little more to explain.
I was just going to explain that where this really came from was over the last couple of years in the United States Congress, there was a proposal that worked its way through that would ban the use of foreign or alien workers on U.S. offshore oil platforms. Unfortunately, the version that almost passed applied to everywhere but in the United States, but Alaska. We were the only state exempted.
Yes.
And so we wanted to make a statement to the federal government that we're going to do this type of legislation, that we not be the only state excluded from it.
We're not really part of the United States.
So that's where it came from.
Okay.
Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was talking to Representative Hanley the other day, and she said that she heard a briefing or received some sort of information about the bottom fish industry that's developing out in Representative Davidson's district, that some private individuals or corporations were going to be or were considering importing people from China to help in the processing of our bottom fish. And I don't know if that was on floating processors or shore-based processing, just because of their willingness to work for low wages compared to what Alaskans would be willing to work for.
Start out with Filipinos.
I know we're talking about offshore oil rigs here on the continental shelf, oil and gas rigs, but does anybody know what that was all about? Cliff, is that something you know about?
Davidson?
Yes, Chairman, I could shed some light on that. I'm close to the situation. Eagle Fisheries is a new American finance fishery in Kodiak. They started up this past March. And they're presently involved in a flatfish fillet project through the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. And what they're doing is they need to have a core of dependable workers in order to be able to operate three shifts a day. So they're requesting that they be allowed to bring in 32 Chinese fish fillets, if you will, and thereby form the background or the backbone of their steady workforce. One of the problems they've had with the American or Alaskan workers is that they're come, they do not, they tend to be a little more transient than they can afford, because if they, you know, when the fish come, that's when they have the workers available. So what this company was trying to do, because of their Chinese contacts, was to have this core workforce so that they could expand their operation, and they're willing to work with the Department of Labor, and they've waited patiently for these workers, but they're just simply not getting the kind of steady worker that they require to maintain their operation. So I don't think there was a discussion of wages or anything other than the fact that they're just trying to look for a steady workforce that they can depend on, that they know will be there and will be gone. For example, in December, they lost over half their workforce because most of them went back to the Philippines for Christmas. Those are some of the problems that they face.
In other words, they require alien employment.
Well, they were all had green cards.
Certainly a concern, something we should keep our ears open to hear what happens in that whole area.
That's how it started.
We all need to go out there and visit.
On this
get
point,
a job at Kodiak.
Can they use these workers as trainers?
Out there regularly.
I mean, fish filleting is a great way to slice your fingers, especially if you're trying to maintain production. So I can see a role for experienced people also along the line of training. But do they use them that way, or do they use them?
Well, I think that, from my understanding of talking with the owners of the company, they were, it is a skilled job to be able to the volume that they have to deal with. You have to work very fast, and so they were looking for that kind of skill level as well.
Representative Nelson.
So this is a shore-based operation?
This is a shore-based operation.
And what kind of, are they just wages to make the operation profitable? It's, they just pay wages that Americans aren't willing to take or Alaskans?
Well, I didn't inquire specifically what they were planning to, weigh the, to pay the Chinese worker, but I would assume that they'd have to pay at least minimum wages. Which, and of course, there would be other expenses. They would have to maintain, you know, living quarters and some way to feed them. The average worker at that plant presently is paid $6 an hour.
Representative Menard.
And I guess following up on that, so have they tried to capture the Alaskan workforce, but it's too transient or it's too unpredictable or too...
Chair, they are currently working with the Department of Labor to establish that core work group. And they have not had the success that they need or would like, and so they continue to push for this immigration waiver to get these people here. But the Department of Labor is working hard to assist this company. It's just a matter of, I mean, we're looking at June, and there'll be plenty of workers from colleges and that kind of thing, but what happens after the school kids go? You know, and that's, it's kind of difficult to have that kind of base, core, hard work group that helps keep you in the business. So I'm on both sides of the fence on this issue.
Well, I think it's a related discussion. Of course, this legislation only deals with offshore oil platforms, so it's a different question, but it is an important question we're going to have to face as a state. Representative Menard.
Well, I think just as a follow-up on that, it, you know, and you can look at this on each side, and I can appreciate Representative Davidson's point, but sometimes when there's an option to bring in, like, foreign workers, as opposed to really working on this side, you can channel your efforts more that way. And I'm not saying this is the case, but I think it is. And then if that option is closed, then you have to work in this workforce, then you develop policies to go on that. So I think it's something that we definitely need to look at. There's certainly two sides to the question.
All right. I guess we can follow this up with both Representative Davis and Representative Hanley. I know she had the concerns about that. Representative Copeland.
You mentioned originally that Congress had considered restricting the employment of aliens on offshore rigs in every state but Alaska.
It passed the House
of Representatives
in that form and went to the Senate, and then they ran out of time during that particular session of Congress. And so I thought it would be good to make a statement to Congress that if they are going to pursue that kind of law again, they, we want to be included.
Yeah, that's sort of what I meant by bringing it up. That I don't want to delay this thing, but I think it would have been useful to somehow mention and say, hey guys, you know what, that we are also part of the United States in this regard, that we should not be treated differently. And that's another point, I think, that's an important point to be made.
Mr. Chairman, in the past, Representative Davidson has invited me out to Kodiak, and I've been considering, I wanted to take a trip out there this past summer, and I think I will do that this summer, depending on circumstances. But I think we should consider as a committee, as many of us who could go out this fall, maybe after the campaigns are over or whatever, to, we're asked, possibly, but to go out and, you know, discuss all these issues surrounding, you know, Americanizing the fishery, now Alaskanizing the fishery, talking about resident and non-resident workforces. Sure, those profits to be made, and all of those sorts of issues we're asked to deal with, and I'm really at a loss. You know, I can't even picture in my mind all the activity that's going on out there. It's really booming, and you know,
it's,
I think we
like
can work
yours marks.
Up there, it's turkey. But anyway, I think we should consider as a group maybe taking Representative Davidson up on his offer of hospitality in the Kodiak on Alaska area for this committee to get a perspective on the billions of dollars that are floating around out there that Alaskans could benefit more. There are probably some things the state could do to help us in that, and I just think we ought to think about that.
President Davidson. Mr. Chairman, I would certainly be remiss if I did not mention that if you haven't been to Kodiak, you've missed the most beautiful part of Alaska, so certainly I would extend an open invitation
when you
to
can see it.
You can say it. You didn't have to say that for a
voucher. Come on. Does the Matt too have a comment
about
that?
Yeah, well, you know, when I was over in Kodiak and I went over for deer hunting, Cliff's wife Evelyn was most cordial, but Cliff was never around. He was out politicking with Stevens or down here doing this or Stevens or Steve coming in.
Honestly.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm trying to earn a living.
Yeah, no, it's just politics.
Forget what we're getting for this job.
Were you working too?
Yes.
Besides the obvious question of Congress is remembering us or treating us as an
all members, we're not arguing otherwise.
My feeling is actually that I have less. I don't have any greater objection to aliens getting jobs in Alaska than. Yeah. You said I did. That the first order of business is finding jobs for Alaskans rather than excluding outside workers. And I realized it was my grandfather and my grandmother who came as immigrant workers.
And a lot of Yuroviches up in Fairbanks.
Right. And if the European economic recovery was very largely based on the so-called guest workers, so, you know, obscure places like Turkey and Finland and the like, but there's always that position. I think that we have to be positive in our approach and get local people trained and give them priority in employment rather than exclusionary and even with the
if you get the yin, you've got to take the yang.
Well, Representative Boucher, did you want to make a motion?
I already did, sir.
Okay. Well, then the motion is to move the resolution with individual recommendations. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection to the resolution committee. Next matter on the agenda is House Bill 517. Is there a representative from the prime sponsor here to testify on this legislation? I guess we need to do some fancy footwork with this amendment, huh? Did you want to address that, too? Or?
I'll be happy to.
Okay.
My name is Judy Knight, and I work for Representative Fran Omer, and she is most apologetic for not being here, but she is taking a little vacation. I guess all of us wish we were there, too. But anyway, Representative Omer introduced House Bill 517, which would protect volunteers working for the state, local governments, or nonprofits from civil liability, except in the cases indicated in the bill of gross negligence, recklessness, or intentional misconduct. I understand that you do have an amendment that has been submitted, and Representative Omer has no objection to the amendment if you would like to incorporate that into the bill as a committee substitute. The bill is modeled after the federal legislation, which is working its way through Congress, and that legislation has moved. It was introduced in both the Senate and the House, and it seems to be moving through Congress, and that legislation is known as the Volunteer Protection Act, and it does exempt volunteers from the liability. There's also a section in the federal legislation that says that states that do not adopt similar legislation by 1989, that there would be a punitive penalty with a reduction in social services block grants.
Okay.
I don't want to take up a lot of the committee's time. I know it is Thursday afternoon and you probably want to get away, but I will be happy to answer any questions, and there are several people here, I believe, who would like to testify very briefly.
Okay, are there questions for the witness? There are no questions. Oh, Representative Copeland. We've had four other pieces of legislation, more specific.
Four. I'm aware of two of those, and I know they're very specific.
In the current legislation, we haven't passed them previously. So I just said the comment on
which is keeping.
And has there been any suit?
Okay. Thank you. There's several members of the public signed up to testify. I don't have any idea what this first name is, but it looks like Juma is the last name.
Jim.
Mr. Juma, did you want to address this bill? And if you could, we're supposed to be going to teleconference at 3 o'clock.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would like to address a bill. My name is James G. Dumont, and I'm representing the Alaska Recreation and Parks Association in support of this bill. I will not read, since you have to go into a teleconference, the resolution itself, but I will leave copies for you so you can take them. The Alaska Recreation and Parks Association is an organization of approximately 100 people that represent the professionals and people involved in the parks and recreation profession in the state of Alaska, and passed this resolution in support of HB 517.
Okay, questions for the witness?
I haven't seen you in a while, Jim.
Hello, Representative Boucher, how are you?
I didn't recognize you with your crutcher over there. Haven't somebody been beating up on you?
Yeah, you know, old age sets in.
Yeah, it's been 20 years.
Too many years of catching.
Yeah.
I thought you were coming here to sue.
There's no questions for the witness. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Bob, looks like... Habit. Okay.
I'm former planning, director of planning for Governor Egan.
Oh.
A very distinguished gentleman.
Now an old distinguished gentleman.
Never mind it. Never mind that old stuff. Just leave that out.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Pavitt, and I'm vice chairman of the AARP, the Alaska State Legislative Committee. Yeah, and I, too, like Mr. Dumont, will refrain from getting in any speeches. But just to remind you that around the time when it became popular to sue everyone in sight, the resultant perception of risk started to make people more leery of volunteering their efforts to social services and other nonprofit organizations. And a number of states, including Alaska, adopted so-called Good Samaritan legislation. The need for the legislation currently before the committee is the perception by a number of organizations that their volunteers are still at risk in today's litigious society. That's a new word that I just learned about.
What does it mean?
It means tending to sue.
We sue a lot.
Litigious. You will note that the proposed legislation protects volunteers who are acting in good faith and specifically excludes acts of gross negligence, recklessness, or intentional misconduct. Mr. Chairman, the Alaska State Legislative Committee, representing over 27,000 older Alaskans who belong to AARP, respectfully request the Labor and Commerce Committee's favorable action on House Bill 517. And I just would like to add that we feel that this is important to all organizations that really depend on volunteers for their existence and for their, including the Folk Festival, you know, which requires thousands of volunteer hours by people because we don't have any money. And the only thing that I have to add, really, is that the proposed amendment is perfectly all right. Because we don't have any problem with the proposed amendment.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions for the witness? Representative Copeland.
Say that the litigious is not a new word. In fact, it was pointed out by Bobby Burns that the Scots were such a most litigious people, as he said in one of his poems, that the reason that Scotland was incorporated into England in the Act of Union was the Scots were busy suing each other in 1705.
And we've kept it up
there. It's a long distinguished history, that word.
Mr. Chairman, I only suggested it was new to me.
Is it Boucher? Did you have...
Yeah, what's the 14th
Annual Alaska Folk Festival opens Monday.
Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Well, we've got two ways to go here, gentlemen. We've got an amendment that seems to be structurally flawed, but in principle everybody agrees with. We want to incorporate it into a committee substitute, and if the committee wants to give the drafters a leeway to do technical adjustments to it, we can go ahead and move a committee substitute out. If the committee wants to, we could always bring the bill back before us for final review. What's just the will of the committee? Representative Davidson.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think we should move this legislation along. I'd be willing to forego the return of this piece of legislation after the visit to the drafter to push it on. I think we should move it on out with individual recommendations and I so move.
All right, so there's I take that as a motion to incorporate the amendment, the proposed amendment into committee substitute as sort of a conceptual amendment and to move the bill and move the committee substitute. Well, we'll take that It's two separate motions. So first of all, there's a motion to incorporate this as a conceptual amendment at committee substitute. Any objection to that motion? No objection. The motion carries. Next motion is to move the bill with as amended to committee substitute as amended with individual recommendations. Any objection to that motion? No objection. The motion carries.
I would like to know the fifth Good Samaritan piece of legislation that either lobbied for or voted on.
They go in different places.
Okay, next matter on the agenda is House Bill 542. There's a new committee substitute. Would staff like to address this on this? Yeah, I'd like to do this next. House Bill 542, and then we're going to move on to 394. We bogged down on this one.
For the record, my name is Tim Dubay. I'm the aide of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. We have before you a new proposed committee substitute for House Bill 542, sponsored by the Labor and Commerce Committee. Last Tuesday, we heard this measure, and this committee considered a draft committee substitute to change the original bill to basically what it stands as now, which is a notification bill. What the measure, the meat of the measure is that requires that any employer or business that is about to undergo a substantial change in business activity, which we understand as a plant closure, merger, privatization, that they have to give their employees 60 days notice that a substantial change in business activity is about to occur that may affect their employment status. Failure to give timely notice entitles the employee to 1 month's severance pay. The changes from the CS that we considered on Tuesday to this bill are as follows. There is clarification of the language dealing with government entities, the privatization language. This was suggested by the APEA to cover some situations that we dealt with earlier in this committee, having to do with the fish hatcheries bill. It just clarifies the conditions. It doesn't matter whether the state contracts out the operation of a private facility. What it deals with is when the state ceases to employ people to do a certain job that they have done in the past, then those people, those employees, are required to be notified, and if they're not notified, then they're entitled to severance pay. As per the wishes of this committee, the language defining government entities specifically includes school districts and REAAs. There is a clause added to the bill that simply states that nothing in this measure supersedes any part of a collective bargaining agreement. And a significant portion is that this bill is now limited to employers that employ 21 or more people. And the preliminary statistics from the Department of Labor and the private sector indicates that this is going to wind up covering about 70% of employees, but it will only affect about 10% of employers, because that's the breakdown of employment in Alaska. And that, in nutshell, is what is in this committee substitute before you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Boucher.
Question for Ginger.
Sure.
Recently, we had a number of the banks go out of business, and the people that have worked for them for some time and had retirement programs and so forth, and I've got some correspondence that I want answer on that with the supply to them.
It would apply to them. They still would be entitled. If it is a bank that employs 21 or more employees, then they are required to notify them.
Yeah, just to remind us, it's a requirement of a written notice.
Yes. Yes, I guess I see it.
What would happen, Representative Boucher, the bank would have the option. They could either tell people 60 days in advance they were going to be out of work, or they could not tell them and then give them a month's severance pay, unless they were covered in a contractual agreement already where some different provisions provided.
Yeah, well, by the very nature of the banking, that didn't occur in lots of things. You know, boom, somebody showed up, FDIC stood out in front, people
said, you're out of work.
The way they operate.
But that's still for the person that's got their retirement benefits or savings or what have you in there.
Under this bill, the bank wouldn't have to, you know, violate any. If the bank, if it's a real important thing financially, they couldn't tell their workers, they still wouldn't have to. The penalty would be they'd have to give them a month's severance pay. Mm-hmm. And that would be what would happen.
Okay. Well, okay.
Representative
Boucher. Why isn't something on the books like that right now?
Good question. There's a representative from the Department of Labor here, and they seem to be supporting the legislation.
We indeed do. It's something that even on the federal level, they still haven't gotten through, and they've been talking about it for 3 years. I think it just recently has become an issue because of a number of them happening all at once through the economic downturn. And somebody starts to realize, wait a minute, we get two more surprise plant closures, the whole city's closed. So now they're beginning to react to that.
To the chair, to the gentleman.
Yeah, the gentleman that just spoke is Mr. James
Sandwick,
at the Department of Labor, yeah.
Have you been having a number of the people from the banking institutions or employees of the banking institutions contact the department?
Not that I'm aware of, but I only directly deal with the ones in this region, so none of the banks in Southeastern have really done anything but merger. Whether anybody in Anchorage got in contact, I wouldn't know.
Sir, while you're here, did you want to give any additional testimony?
Mr. Chairman, all I could add is that we support the changes that have been made, and I can verify that what Ms. James said is indeed true. I know I've got the statistics. I can give staff if I can have them in the
Yeah, we'd like to add that to the committee packet to send the next committee referral. Are there questions for the witness?
Oh, well, I didn't look at this one out of committee and on the way. Send a copy to my...
We've got three more committees referral on our side, so we've got a ways to go. Any further discussion? Motion?
Come on.
Yeah, move it. Chair would entertain a motion to move it.
Oh, yeah. We need to adopt the committee substitute.
Okay, any objection to adopting the committee substitute? The 33188 Kramer version? Hearing no objection, motion carries. Okay. Any objection to the motion? No objection. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have you attach a note to this that, and I'm glad to give you a copy of the letter regarding the number of people in the banks that have gone out of business and those there. I mean, there are people that are sitting there waiting for their savings, and they're locked in the grid of this thing. I mean, I'd like to point to some specific thing because people and the urgency of having some type of relief for them. It's patently unfair.
Well, hopefully...
Ginger, I have a copy of a letter from a lady that has worked for First Interstate, and I'd like to include that in the testimony of this. If you would please remind me.
Contact your office after the hearing and get a copy.
Well, I'm in the office right now. I mean, everybody's abandoned ship. They can't stand to work.
Are we ready to go on?
Sure. All right, Chairman.
Yes.
If I could just ask a question on this. With my understanding, I got some calls from those bank people. In the ones that I got, they were paid their wages and all this stuff. What it was the benefits.
Yes.
Does this legislation cover that? No, I didn't.
If they had a... It doesn't provide for their benefits, but we do have a separate piece of legislation. It's in the committee now. It's a Senate bill that provides for that.
Right, yeah. And wasn't the one Phillips had heard?
Okay, yeah,
Phillips is Bill Weaver.
Well, I'm interested in both of them. Why couldn't these two things be combined?
Well, one started a long time ago.
Well, we may end up doing that. We do have a Senate bill that's a little bit, it's different than Representative Phillips' bill. It's a little bit different.
Well, knowing of your deep concern for matters like that, I think that we've got to, that's got to be a top priority. I mean, we are having people that are...
The danger of combining the two bills is one deals with just the banking system, and this one deals with, like, industrial, any other larger employees also. Okay. So it might be tough to merge the two, because one shows up in the banking statutes.
Because you have more lobbying against it.
Well, yeah, and one shows up in the banking statutes. It's a whole separate... whole different part of the statutes.
In addition, Representative Boucher, we have a Senate bill that will offer some relief to bank employees that's in this committee now. Yeah. And this bill has three other committees of referrals in the House.
Okay. When are we going to hear that?
Well, we're working our way to it. next week I'm going to try to do some of the recommendations of the Joint Economic Recovery Committee and get the confirmation, half confirmation names out of the way. So the members could take a look at, in fact, while we're getting the teleconference online, take a look at the list of names that we've got for next week. There's quite a substantial number of them. There's 10 to 20 names. And we'll be doing the usual routine if nobody has any objections or we won't plan to schedule a teleconference with any of those people unless somebody requests it. If not, at that time, we'll just open it up for public testimony and move them out.
Okay.
Next matter on the agenda is House Bill 394. Representative Copeland is the chairman of the subcommittee that this legislation has been in. Ginger, the people signed up to testify on 394? Have anyone from the public signed up to testify? There's several proposed amendments in the members' folders. Did you want to?
I looked at the amendments that were proposed by Representative Boucher, and they think that they have a majority vote in the
Okay, so we've had one hearing on this legislation already. We were kind of short-handed when we had that, and one of the problems was the provision that required that cooperatives get a two-thirds vote before they could sell. There was a lot of concern expressed that in the larger cooperatives, example, Chugach Electric and stuff, it'd be almost impossible to get two-thirds of the people to vote on something. It'd be 30,000 people you have to get. And lucky to get any. So the proposal was to leave that part of the existing law alone, majority vote being necessary, and to change it to two-thirds for the smaller cooperatives, and that's what amendment number one reflects.
That's the Kramer 5, 1595 BA,
I guess. Right. Let me...
We have no participants in Anchorage. They will call us if they get some.
Okay, fine. So I guess the chair would entertain a motion to adopt amendment number one and then any discussion the committee wants to make on that.
That is your motion.
Go ahead. That's fine.
So, Representative Boucher, you move to adopt.
Clarification here, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davidson.
I have 2 minutes in my pack. Are you talking about the one that...
maybe yours isn't labeled. I got this one labeled number one. It probably didn't spill over. It's the Kramer 5-1695, capital B, small a.
Okay. Thank you.
Primarily the Chugach is a very large cooperative.
That's right. Representative Boucher, you made a motion to adopt this last meeting we had on this, and it's on the table. So it's before us now for discussion. Is there any objection to this motion?
No objection.
Okay, then hearing no objection, motion, the amendment is adopted and incorporated in the committee substitute. I'm not exactly clear whether we adopted the committee substitute yet, but we'll go ahead and do a motion to adopt the committee substitute once it's been amended. There's another amendment in your packets. Representative Boucher, was that your only amendment?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There's another proposed amendment by myself that would delete certain language that exempted public access to certain records of the co-ops. And I had some concern about that since it wasn't an existing law. And I thought that we could just leave the law the way it is now rather than... Did you want to talk about this particular amendment?
Doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
Preparing for or after this.
For the record, my name is Cindy Bain, aide to the House Labor and Commerce Committee. I asked the drafter to draft this amendment in response to Donnie's request and also several people's comments. They were alarmed by the way the language was worded in the current committee substitute. And this was the concern. The way that language is worded, it says that a cooperative board may withhold information that was prepared for an executive session or discussed in an executive session. The concern was for perhaps an overzealous person on the board that would take what would be otherwise public information and deny public access under the pretense that it was prepared for a executive session, even though the information was not used for an executive session, that they could, in fact, use this as a vehicle to deny public access to what should appropriately be public information. All right, there's two changes the drafters made here. The first is that, as she said, there was no, it didn't matter whether the information was actually discussed during the executive session. If it was a legitimate executive session, then the information should be, the board should be able to hold that information secret. If it was not a legitimate executive session, then a consumer has access under Section 16 of the bill to try to get some recourse for that if they were harmed by that action. So she deleted the word that was discussed in, but that it was, if it was prepared for an executive session or prepared during an executive session, in other words, in the process of an executive session, you know, the board members put information A together with information B and come up with information C, then that is, in fact, was prepared during the executive session. If it's a legitimate executive session, then they may withhold that information. The other clarifier here is that if the board subsequently released any of this information, then it became accessible to the public. And it's significant that the information has to be subsequently released by the board, not released by a private party. In other words, if a private party somehow gained access to information that was used during executive session and then went public with it, that the board still could withhold that information. The second sentence that she added here was talking about that the board does not have to reveal the information that they referred to during an executive session. The information that they use in executive session may in fact be public information, but they don't have to explain to anybody what information that they referred to. That if it was a legitimate executive session, then they can withhold that information.
Representative Copeland's pointed out maybe there's a drafting error. I'm just trying to read this again. Start on page 9, the new line 28, the new language. The cooperative may withhold books and records concerning specific matters that were prepared, and at that point it should be during an executive session. So I guess the technical amendment that would be necessary is on the proposed amendment to insert the word for is also being deleted.
Mr. Chairman,
If we leave it as it was, it seems to make sense to me. It says the cooperative may withhold books and records concerning specific matters that were prepared for or during an executive session. I don't see how we have to
make any change. Well, that makes sense too.
Yeah. So you have to put a comma in there. Or. Comma. Or.
Well, I just read it as concerning specific matters that were prepared for or during an executive session. I think it's correct as it was submitted.
Except as a former English teacher, I would have to put a comma after a for, because that's a subordinate clause. Or during.
Would you get
it's not subordinate, though, is it, teacher?
No.
Cliff, because it's
but
this
you're being
or that.
Insubordinate. Well, maybe we can just, as a technical amendment, put a comma in there, and I think Representative Davidson's point is well taken. We don't need for or after all, but we could just say that we're going to have a comma after or. Is that your...
Yeah,
is it after
or? After
or
and after during.
After or and after during.
Is that what you were teaching those kids over?
Or during. Oh, I see. So it would say you have prepared for or during, comma, and exactly. Okay. Oh, I see. It separates out the phrase.
Yeah,
that's right. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I should be before. May I ask one more question? It seems that it was you were dealing with two things, and that's why I don't see the need for the comma. I mean, these records or books were prepared for that specific executive session, or they prepared during that
I honestly don't think that the comment is necessary, with all due respect to my fine teacher.
Can we leave it to the drafters? What do you think?
Fine with me.
Why don't we just leave this one to the drafters, and then staff will just make a note that the committee was concerned about the placement of this comma.
Wheels of government in progress.
Now, we are not going to stop this legislation.
No. And I don't think anybody can say we're abrogating our responsibilities to the public here either.
I don't leave this up to the legislative drafters in the way I would talk to Dyer.
Where was that? I'll be the judge here. I'll send it up to my computer.
That's the vacation time.
Okay. Well, given that possible technical amendments out there, the drafters are going to take care of it. Is there any objection to the amendment 5-1695, capital B, small b? Jim Davidson, did you want some more time to take a look at it?
Or do I have been discussed? Yeah, there's a
comment. Hey, John Fisher. Jim Davidson, I was like, just waiting to give you an opportunity. Okay, are there any objections to the amendment? There are no objections. The amendment would be incorporated in the committee substitute.
Move we adopt the committee substitute.
Okay. Is there any objection to adoption of the committee substitute? There are no objection. Committee substitute is adopted. The bill is before us for discussion. Is there any public testimony? Okay. Representative Davidson.
Since there's not a rush to offer any further testimony, I think we've been through this bill very thoroughly, and I would therefore move this legislation out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objection? Hearing no objection, motion carries. Bill moves with individual recommendations. And that's the last matter to come before the committee. Now, next week, we're only going to have one meeting because the floor session on Tuesday is at 2 o'clock. So that's our usual meeting time. So Thursday, we could have a fairly long meeting. So we should watch out for other conflicts on that day because there'll be our only meeting that week.
Yeah, I'd like to have you get one more of my bills on that Thursday meeting, too.
Okay, well, we put two of the joint committee's bills on the calendar and
the committee.
Pardon?
The Southwest plan.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we take a look and see if there's a way we could get it shoved on there, too. We'll see. If not, we'll for sure try to get on for next week because I was trying to prioritize the joint economic bills.
We have the bill file.
Yes, the bill file.
And once again, take a look at the names that are up for confirmation review next week, and then the week after that we'll try to do the remaining names. And okay.
I don't feel bad, I think I'm right.
Well, actually,
we might have to show this bill moving out next Tuesday because we had it for a work session, so just for the record reflect.
It's also not a fix.
We might have to pull it up again next Thursday.
Typically, if you're educated in the East or of an older generation.
He was educated in berries out there.
If you're educated,
he's a hoomier.
Starting from California, moving eastward, and then you get younger.
Felix the Cat was their mascot.
Who was the old guy who settled the hunt?
There's a line in the drafting.
Oh, Lord Timothy Dexter. Hey, it was this guy 100